Welcome everybody this afternoon to the Second Court of Appeals. We have three cases to be argued today, but we're going to take a break after each one. When y'all are welcome to hang around and listen to any other ones that might catch your fancy, but we have one case set for 1:30. I understand that everyone has checked in. Before we get started, though, I'll introduce the panel that we have today. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach. To my right, Justice Dana Womack, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. So unless there are any questions, we'll get started.
The court will now call Jose Alba et al. Versus Cal Atlantic Homes of Texas et al. May it please the court, Mr. Robert Lamb Jr. will argue for the appellant. Ms. Margaret Bryant will argue for the appellee.
Thank you. You may proceed, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Lamb, and I represent Jose Alba and his wife and two children in this matter involving an appeal in a case out of Denton County. With respect to the argument today, I'm going to focus on, first of all, the issue under Chapter 95 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code as to whether Cal Atlantic had met its burden of proof to show that it was an owner of property as defined by Chapter 95. And I think when you look at Chapter 95, the definition of a property owner in 950013 states that it is a person or entity that owns real property and primarily used for commercial or business purposes. With respect to proving the applicability of Chapter 95, that was Cal Atlantic's burden because it is their obligation to prove that. They are required to prove that conclusively. It is our position that the record does not support conclusive proof that Cal Atlantic is a property owner as defined under Chapter 950013. Well, there is no dispute that they owned the property that Mr. Alba was working on and that he was going to inspect for purposes of doing some masonry brickwork. The question is, did Cal Atlantic conclusively prove that the real property was primarily used for commercial or business purposes? Now, there is no doubt that the evidence shows that they are a home builder and that they owned this particular lot. But from the standpoint of what this lot was going to be used for, I know that they're in the appellee's brief. They state that the property was going to be sold along with other houses in the neighborhood and that it was going to be sold to a homeowner. There is no evidence to conclusively prove that. I think that my problem with the appellee's argument in this regard is they seem to say, we're a business, we owned property, therefore we fall under the definition of a property under Chapter 95. And I think their burden requires more, and it requires some type of evidence that would have stated, this is what this property was being used for, this is what our intention was for it, and that's just not there. With respect to the second issue.
But what does their intention have to do with it? It's either being used for business or it's being used for residential. What else could it be used for, and why does their intent have anything to do with it?
Well, I think that demonstrates that the property is primarily used for a commercial or a business purpose. With respect to the fact that they say they're going to sell this and that that was what they contemplated, that's not really clear in the record. I don't believe they've conclusively shown that.
What is their intent or what they plan to use it for? Why is that relevant? As opposed to at the time of the event, what was it being used for?
Right. Well, I think if they demonstrate what it was being used for, that's one thing. But this particular piece of property, to my understanding, it was not occupied. There was nobody in the premises conducting any kind of commercial business or anything like that, at least as far as the record demonstrates.
Was it under construction?
It was, yes.
So if something is under construction, it can't be used for commercial business because it hasn't reached its final.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I think it can be, yes. But I think that there has to be some evidence that is the purpose for the construction.
You don't think that the master subcontractor agreement can be read as because it has references to homeowner in such a way that, I, as the appellee notes, it's clear that it's being contemplated, whether it's important or not, what the intent was. The entirety of the transaction seems to be that this house and others were being built for Cal Atlantic to sell.
Right.
Which would make it a business or commercial use, would it not?
Well, the provisions that the appellee pointed out in the record in the master subcontractor agreement I've looked at, and while they do talk in terms of certain obligations to a homeowner, there are obligations that are warranty obligations, there are obligations with respect to any kind of problem that might need to be repaired. Nowhere does that contract say that this particular property is being constructed for a homeowner who is going to buy the property.
Well, so give us an example of the kind of proof that you think Cal Atlantic had to have put into this record in order to be considered a homeowner for Chapter 95 purposes. What did it have to say?
Well, I think that the affidavit from their construction manager could have added additional language in it where they stated in there this particular lot was under construction, it was a residential home, and it was being prepared for a buyer who was going to buy the home from Cal Atlantic and occupy it. But there's not any language like that in that affidavit.
If we were to agree with you, though, would we not be establishing some sort of, are you asking us to establish some sort of bright line rule about, yes, these are the components of the type of proof that's required?
I don't know that I'm asking for a bright line rule. I think, though, that certainly under the summary judgment standards, when you are a defendant and you move for summary judgment on an affirmative defense, in this case the applicability of Chapter 95, the standard is that you conclusively prove all elements of that affirmative defense. So I think it's simply saying that Cal Atlantic did not meet that burden. Is what the appellant's argument is. And the record does not demonstrate that they met that burden. With respect to the second argument, with regard to Chapter 95 and the applicability of Chapter 95 with respect to the work that Mr. Alba was doing, and whether, in fact, the injury that Mr. Alba suffered resulted from a condition or use of the same improvement on which the contractor is working when the injury occurs. My primary argument on that is, and I'm relying on authority in the Cox case, I'm relying on authority in the Hernandez case, and I'm relying on authority in the Paniagua case, And
can I ask you a question?
Sure,
Do you think those cases are still good law, considering Hernandez and Cox were NOPEC cases, and the Supreme Court has issued several opinions in the last couple of years in this area?
The answer is I don't know. When I saw the Los Compadres case, when I saw the case that came out, the Wallace case last month, I looked to see if there was anything in there that might give us guidance on those three cases. I expected maybe some kind of criticism or some outright statement from the Supreme Court saying, hey, these three cases, based on the standards that we've set in the recent cases, are no longer good law. And it's not there.
Well, it might not be there in so many words, but Valdez seems to me, I mean, because when the workers there who were injured, they were not working on the power lines, but they were close enough with their rebar that constituted working on the improvement.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So distinguish for us how Mr. Alba's being on a balcony with a 2x4 that was, from the pictures at least, right there by where the column that he was going to be constructing would be. How's that different from Valdez?
The only thing that I can say is he was not working on those 2x4s. That was not his job. His job was a mason. His job was to work with bricks and to brick the columns. Those 2x4s that were across the balcony were not anything that he was going to be part of the improvement that he was working on. I will say, though, and I commented to Appellee's counsel earlier, the Wallace case and the Los Compadres case, it seems to be, I use the term death by a thousand cuts. The Supreme Court keeps giving us these opinions without coming out and expressly saying, hey, the Cox case, the Hernandez case, the Paniagua case are just not good law anymore. And I'm not going to disagree, Justice Kerr, that the facts in Los Compadres are not good for my client's case. I was much happier with Hernandez and Cox, as far as, you know, you've got, in one case, you've got somebody who's standing on a grate when they're working on a piece of machinery and their foot, the grate, gives way underneath. I think that's much more similar factually to Mr. Alba's situation. But again, based on the Los Compadres case and even the recent case in Wallace, I don't think that's what the Supreme Court is contemplating.
Yeah, they seem to be taking a pretty holistic view of what an improvement is.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be a very broad application of the statute. Yes.
Let me throw you a curveball here. The order, which was signed by the court, checkbox, granted. There's no decretal language. Why do we have jurisdiction?
I noticed that, and the only thing that I can point out to you is that when you look at the record, after the court granted summary judgment, at that point, the defendants non-suited the remaining claims, and that's page 133 in the record. And the court did sign a non-suit. I think when you construe the summary judgment order with that non-suit, I think it's clear that all of the claims were disposed of, even though the order did not have the what we used to call Mother Hubbard language, or, you know, this disposes of all claims and all parties and is final and appealable. With respect to the appellants, we would ask this court, upon reviewing the briefs and after hearing argument, we would ask that you reverse and remand this matter back to the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Bryant?
May it please the court. My name is Margaret Bryant, and I represent Cal Atlantic Hems of Texas, Lennar Corporation, and Lennar Pacific Management Properties, doing business as Village Builders. I'll refer to them as Cal Atlantic and the Lennar entities. I'll not address the facts except in relation to the two legal issues on appeal, but I do want to mention two procedural issues before jumping into those legal issues. Appellant, who I'll refer to as Alba for simplicity, do not appeal the summary judgments in favor of the Lennar entities. They only appeal the summary judgment in favor of Cal Atlantic. And in that regard, for the summary judgment against Cal Atlantic, they only dispute whether or not Chapter 95 applies. It does not dispute that if Chapter 95 applies, then the liability standard required under Chapter 95 has not been met. So summary judgment should be upheld as long as Chapter 95 applies. So turning to the first issue, which is whether or not Cal Atlantic was a property owner that primarily used the property for business or commercial purposes. That part of the statute has not really been, I haven't found any cases where that's been litigated or construed by a court, and the Albas don't cite any. But looking at the meaning of those terms, they're very broad. The language used suggests a very broad intent. Commercial is defined as manufactured for markets. It also means involving the ability of a business to make a profit. That's from Black's Law Dictionary, the 11th edition at page 336. Business is defined as a commercial enterprise carried on for profit. That's also Black's Law Dictionary at page 247. I think it's interesting that both of the definitions use the other term to partly define it. Commercial includes the term business, and business uses the term commercial. So there's a lot of overlap there, but we know because the Texas legislature used the disjunctive term in the statute, that it's meant to be broadly applied. They're trying to capture as much business and commercial activity as possible. And it doesn't have to be exclusively a commercial or business purpose. It's just primarily. So the language used is indicating a very strong application. And it has been applied by courts. Courts have found that a home builder, that Chapter 95 applies to a home builder. Most recently in the Los Compadres Pescadores LLC versus Valdez case, from the Texas Supreme Court, in 2021, that's at 622 Southwest 3rd, there that the defendant involved a home builder. One of the few cases that actually kind of touches upon whether or not the defendant was a home builder is Painter versus Momentum Energy Corporation out of the El Paso Court of Appeals, and that's at 271 Southwest 3rd, 388, and specifically 397. And they very lightly touch upon it. They basically find that the defendant was a property owner under Chapter 95 because it owned a mineral interest. The analysis doesn't go that much further. And I think that there's not much litigation around this issue because it is very broadly determined. And I'm hard-pressed to think of an instance where a business would own property that's not primarily used.
Was there anything in the Los Compadres case where the court went into the sort of the granular evidence that was provided to support the idea that it was a commercial or business owner?
No, Your Honor. No, there's just an example of where that Chapter 95 has been applied to home builders. There's very few cases, like the Painter case is one of the few where it even touches upon whether or not the defendant is a home builder. Most of the time they just describe the defendant and don't really specifically address whether or not the defendant's a home
builder. Do you agree that it was your burden to establish that as a matter of law?
Yes, that is our burden on the summary judgment, yes.
So what is the evidence that you offer that establishes that as a matter of law?
Yes, there's a lot of evidence. There's not a conclusory statement saying that, you know, the property was being used for commercial or business purpose, but you've got Alba's pleading that acknowledges that Cal Atlantic is a corporation and had a principal place of business. You also have the affidavit of Andrew Richards, who was Cal Atlantic's construction manager. He testifies to not just overseeing the general contractor work that Cal Atlantic was performing on the home at that point for that home, but also the other homes in the neighborhood that Cal Atlantic was building. He testifies, too, to the specific relationship between Cal Atlantic and Alba's employer, Perez Masonry Construction, and the relationship there, that there was they were the contractor, and he was one of the subcontractors that was being used to build the house. And that's all part of a business enterprise that Cal Atlantic was undergoing at that time. And he describes that there was a master subcontractor agreement between Cal Atlantic, identified as the contractor, and Perez Masonry Construction as the subcontractor, that laid out the terms of that of Perez Masonry Construction's work, not just for the home that Alba was working on at the time he was injured, but for all the homes that they would work on for Cal Atlantic, because it's in the business of building homes. And that master subcontractor agreement, as was pointed out, has lots of terms describing that primary contractor, general contractor relationship, but then also it talks about how the duties that would be owed once Cal Atlantic sold the home to a home buyer. And it has terms related to how Perez Masonry Construction would handle work once the home was sold to a home buyer. And it had other terms like insurance terms, warranty terms, and dispute resolution terms, because as part of the end goal there is to sell the home to the home buyer. So cumulatively, the evidence shows that Cal Atlantic was in the business of building this home, was in the process of doing it. And that evidence is undisputed. Alba in his affidavit describes Cal Atlantic as not just the owner but also the general contractor. It was performing general contractor duties and was in the business of acting as a general contractor at that time. So I think the evidence is there's ample evidence in the record to show that it falls within the statute, that Cal Atlantic is a business owner that was primarily using the property for the commercial or business purpose of building homes. So turning to the second issue on appeal, which is whether or not Alba's claim arises from a dangerous condition of an improvement where Perez Masonry Construction was was working. You know, they basically admit that Valdez applies, that Valdez is controlling in that. And Valdez was, in Valdez, the contractors were installing pilings, and the pilings hit a power line, and the power line's what was injured them when the power line hit the pilings, and that caused the injury. Under what Alba's arguing is that the two by so there we know that the pilings that they were working on, the contractors were not working on the power line. That was not within their scope of work. So the power line was not part of their work, but it became part of the improvement, according to the Texas Supreme Court, because of the dangerous condition and when it interacted and came in close proximity. Here, it's undisputed that the dangerous condition is this 2x4 that was attached to a support column on a balcony, and that Alba was specifically testifies that he was looking at strings hanging from the support column. Their argument is that the 2x4 can't be the same. Chapter 95 doesn't apply because the 2x4 is not the improvement that they were hired to work on. But just as in Valdez, the contractors in Valdez were not hired to work on the power line. So Valdez is directly applicable here in controls, and their same dangerous condition and improvement argument is disproven by Valdez. And as they admit just a minute ago, that the cases that they rely on in support of were all decided before Valdez.
So is the improvement, if it's not the 2x4, is it the support column? Is it the porch? Is it the brick masonry work? What is it?
I don't think the court has to specifically decide. You know, at a minimum, I would say that it's the support column. The support column, you know, was in direct contact with the 2x4, and he, to examine the support column, came into contact with the 2x4, causing him to fall. But even if you go to the narrowest possible improvement, which would be the string, that's still in close enough proximity under Valdez to trigger Chapter 95, for Chapter 95 to apply. Because there he had to, it's very in very close proximity, and he had to look at the string. He again forced him to come in contact with that dangerous condition, the 2x4, just as the piling, installing the piling, forced the contact with the electrical line in Valdez. And also in Valdez, they talk about the proximity as being, they don't say specifically what the proximity needs to be, but they do say, you know, if it's hundreds of yards away, that's not, there's no proximity there. Here, the string was in very close proximity to Alba at the time of injury. So I don't think the court has to specifically decide what the scope of the improvement is, because under any possible scenario of what the improvement is, Valdez controls and Chapter 95 applies. If there aren't any additional questions,
I'm going to throw you my curve out of left field, too.
Okay.
Back in 2003, in Naaman versus Grider, the Texas Supreme Court pretty clearly said that an order that merely grants a motion for judgment is in no sense a judgment itself. It adjudicates nothing. And that same rule was applied 2 years ago by the San Antonio Court of Appeals in the Frausto versus RC Industries case with respect to an order granting a summary judgment. That's all we have in this case, is a checkbox granting of a summary judgment and then a ministerial issue with respect to a non-suit as to other parties. How does this court have jurisdiction?
I would request the opportunity to further brief that issue and look into it, but I will also, there is the fact that it was non-suited, that all the issues have been resolved in the case, and so I think that there's finality there.
Okay.
So if there are no further questions, I'll give my time back to the court.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Just briefly, I want to address the appellee's argument with regard to proving property owner status under 95. I think there are no cases that have an analysis of that. And I think the mere fact that you have a case that might involve a home builder is not in and of itself dispositive on the issue. I don't think you can simply say we're a home builder, therefore 95 applies.
Well, could the flip side of that maybe be that it hasn't been litigated much because it's self-evident?
Well, it could be that it's either self-evident, or it could be that the evidence that was presented in those cases conclusively established the ownership, where there wasn't a doubt, there wasn't a problem with the record and that particular issue. So, again, on behalf of the appellants, we would ask that this court reverse and remand the case back to district court. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the argument. It's been helpful. Your case is submitted, and we will stand in recess until 2:30. Thank you.